fundamentally different information about matter and physical processes. And because the mechanisms of polarization are very specific, they are often divided into two big groups: the internal mechanisms that are about the accretion disk processes, hot corona, the jet formation area, and so on, and external processes. There are two types of scattering by the ionization cone and dusty torus. And our team at SAWA focuses on these three mechanisms, very basic, but all this make possible to study different processes in AGNs and in a way that it would be impossible to do without. Here I will give a really brief summary. And here the study of the polarization in the continuous continuum light allows us to apply models of classical accretion disk inside the AGNs with the magnetic field, and so estimate some parameters of accretion disk and of the black hole. The rapid variability of polarization in blazes is about the plasma motion inside the magnetic field of the jet. And these two points, what I will be focused on today, is about the gas kinematics in broad line region, the supermassive black hole parameters, the scattering region parameters, and they are about the equatorial scattering actually. But it's a very beautiful picture that polarimetry allows us to do lots of things in AGNs, but I need to add a fly to this picture, because even the closest AGNs are faint objects and they are weakly polarized. And the observations are difficult due to very low signal-to-noise ratio in polarized light. And therefore, the spectropolarimetric observations technique is available only on a very limited number of large telescopes. However, even very large telescopes do not solve all the problems with the observations. And basically, incorrect estimates raised due to three main factors. And the simplest one is the interstellar medium polarization. And although the main contribution here is in the infrared range, in the optical band, it may raise up to 10% and strongly depends on the galactic coordinates of the object. And one way to estimate the interstellar medium polarization is to determine the average polarization by nearby stars in the field of view of the investigating object. And it's important and it's necessary to subtract the ISM polarization in a vector form from the observed values. Then, the second problem is the distortion introduced by the device. Firstly, the device has its own instrumental polarization, which needs to be corrected. And moreover, the spectral optics provides a geometrically distorted image. This is not the problem until the object spectrum is comparable or even weaker than the night sky background, which you should subtract. And for example, in case of stars, there is no such a problem. Then the better the quality of the correction of the frame geometry, the less residual noise from the sky subtraction you'll eventually have. And the last problem, and probably the main problem, is the atmosphere. Actually, the atmosphere is the main source of problem for polarimetry, because radiation passing through the atmosphere can be either depolarized by scattering even in the light sources, or receive additional polarization, pretty big polarization, in high clouds on the ice crystals. And often these effects become visible only when processing the data, not during the observations. And worse, during the observations, the polarization in the atmosphere constantly flickers, which is why additional noise appears in the observations, and it should be compensated by some differential methods, some differential approaches, like differential polarimetry, for example. So as a main part, as a first part of my contribution, there is a number of tips that you should remember when you are dealing with polarimetry observations. So you should be extremely careful of the nearby stars of the objects, of the instruments and telescopes, of the nights that you choose for observations that should be dark and extremely clear. And please do not forget to observe the standard stars, and do not believe who didn't do this for their own observations. They are wrong, actually. And only if you were able to come over all these tricks, now we can talk about the analysis of polarimetric data. And today, our small group at SAO continues the great activity started by Viktor Afanasyev and Luka Popovich on AGNs with equatorial scattering. And the first work was done in 2014 on Mercury and Six. And already next year, a paper appeared with the new method of estimating the supermassive black hole masses based on the analysis of the variation of the polarization angle along the broad lines. In 2019, a large article by three of my colleagues was published where the results of observations of 30 galaxies appeared. And here I won't repeat the result of this work, but I recommend all of you to read it because except supermassive black hole masses, there are estimates of the inclination angles, the relations of signs and ultraviolet luminosity, large number of averaged parameters, some statistics about the accretion disk and so on. And now we are going on with AGN spectrochromatic observations. And here I will consider three new cases. And I'd like to start with the paper that appeared, the idea appeared in 2019. Then the spectropolarimetry was carried out only in AGNs up to redshift 0.3, pretty close AGNs, and only in the H alpha line, primarily because it's the brightest in the optical range. And in the case of the distant galaxies at the redshift more than one, ultraviolet lines are observed in optical range, which firstly emit in a very compact region. And on the other hand, there are often outflows in these lines. For example, here is the magnesium 2 line with the clearly observed blue asymmetry, indicating a strong wind from the broad line region. In 2020, my colleague Giorgio Savage, using Stokes package, considered a model where there is a gas, radial gas motion with the high velocity from the equatorial plane and from the magnesium 2 line emitting region. And it turned out that even under such extreme conditions, the variations of polarization angle should be observed with some specific features, but still it should. And this allowed us to confidently observe pretty distant quasar, distant in our understanding. The quasar named SBS 1419, which is located at the redshift 1.9, was observed in the magnesium 2 line. And despite the broad line region wind, the line wasn't depolarized, and we can see clear signs of equatorial scattering. And this allowed us to estimate the mass of the supermassive black hole, about 5 billion solar masses. And right now, it's the farthest and the heaviest quasar detected by this spectropolarimetric method, which is in principle logical because it's a quite bright quasar, about 16 magnitude, which is comparable to the brightness of the near-Pacific galaxies. And it also opens up some perspectives of measuring other distant quasars using polarization, regardless the angle of inclination of the systems. And furthermore, it will define the luminosity mass relations for distant quasars. In the other object in Q57, we started with the observations with the same reasons. This is a far quasar at the redshift of 1.4, which is lensed by the elliptical galaxies. So on the celestial plane, you can see two images of the quasars that are separated with the six arcseconds. And there are broad emission lines in the optical range, the carbon line, the magnesium line, and we wanted to detect equatorial scattering elsewhere. But the a problem is that there was no signs of equatorial scattering in these lines at all. And it seems that some depolarization medium is presented in the central region of quasars, like the hot corona above the broad line region, which is preferred option due to the presence of the absorption in the Lyman alpha line, or the contrast of the effect in polarized light is simply not observed due to the comparable sizes of the emitting and the scattering regions. However, we discovered some other intriguing properties. And firstly, it was found that when we subtract the continuum from the spectral data for both of these images of the quasar, the brightness of lines is the same. So the lines do not experience the brightness amplification. And moreover, the ratio of fluxes in two components changes over several decades of the observation monitoring. And this is due to the 400 days delay. At the same time, the variability demonstrates trend, the bluer the brighter. And it's the reason why we assume the internal variability of accretion disk of the source as the source continuum, although the variability of component B is slightly different. So we cannot completely ignore the micro lensing either. However, in my opinion, the most intriguing properties of this quasar is about the polarization, actually. As it can be seen in the previous picture here in the spectral polarimetry data, that despite the fact that the polarization is very small, firstly, it weakly depends on the wavelengths, especially in the polarization angle. And secondly, it differs between the components. And generally speaking, it's not typical for gravitational lens systems. And we tested these effects with the additional polarimetric observations in broadband filters. And we actually found that the polarization vector in two images of the quasar is indeed oriented differentially. And the interpretation is still open. Either we see the effects of the jet precession due to the delay between the images, but it's not confirmed with the radio data, which is pretty stable, or we are dealing with the extended polarized source, which is gravitational lensed, and it gives a different observed polarization, which Georgios showed by his models. And finally, there are some new results, which is really extremely new because we submitted the paper only yesterday. And here we study quasars from sample from the photometric reverberation mapping campaign, which we are still conducting in SAWA. And for this sample, there are two objects that have already given the results. And the first of them, the object named O853, or here we used its leader name. As in the previous quasar, lensed quasar Q0957, there is no features of the Equatorian scattering, despite the fact that the objects continuum turned out to be quite polarized, about the 1% in average. Of course, it may be caused by the effects that we do not fully take into account, like interstellar medium polarization and so on. But here within this work, we believe that this polarization is completely generated in the accretion disk with the magnetic field. And then, as it was shown in work by my co-author, Mikhail Petrovich, the degree of polarization is related to the characteristics of the accretion disk and the intensity of the magnetic field in it. And this allows us to estimate a number of parameters, such as the degree of dependence of the magnetic field on the accretion disk radius, the magnitude of the magnetic field, the parameters of supermassive black hole, like spin, for example. So large number of physical parameters for this system that could be achieved in any other way. And again, all these values are very extremely model dependent, actually. But it's better than nothing. In case of the second quasar, this 7TWIKI 244, on the contrary, we were able to find the features of the equatorial scattering. And because both of broad lines was in the optical range, we found these features both in H alpha and H beta line. Also, there is H gamma line in the optical spectra, but here is no signs of the scattering, probably because the intensity in this line is pretty small, and that's why the observed effect is pretty non-detectable, let's say so. And so here we were able to fully apply the spectropolarimetric method to determine the supermassive black hole mass. and comparing it with our previous reverberation mapping results, we obtained the angle of inclination of the system. And this angle, about the 14 degrees, is relatively small. But actually, this was the great success for us. We succeeded in it, actually, that this estimation was in agreement with the previous one taken by the infrared spectral energy distribution estimations, and also taken by the spectral estimations given by our co-authors. So, and actually this is quite surprising because the average angle for equatorial scattering is about 35 degrees, but this angle is pretty small. It's fairly like to be blazer, but still we can see no features of the Biela Theta object. But here actually one main question still remains: how to determine the size of the scattering region, which is included here in the calculation of the supermassive black hole masses. And for this galaxy, the broadline region size was obtained during our reverberation mapping campaign. Also, the object was included in the infrared reverberation mapping sample, and this size, the size of the infrared emission of the dust, is 10 times greater than we achieved by our optical campaign. And in principle, this value could be used as the size of the equatorial scattering region. However, the infrared radiation of the dust is formed in optically thick regions, which should be located deeper in the dusted forest than the place when the scattering occurs. And in the work of Afanasyev and others, it was shown that the size of the scattering region, according to statistics on 30 AGNs, should be equal to 5 times of the radius of the broadline region. And for Tweaky in this case, we have the size of the scattering region by these relations about 160 days. And eventually we decided to use this estimate to calculate the mass. But although even if we take these infrared estimations, the masses coincide within the errors what we eventually take. And why did we choose this value? Generally speaking, determine the position of the scattering region in AGNs is a big problem. The broadline region is determined well using the optical methods. With the help of the infrared observations, it's already possible to resolve the dusted torus. And the region of the equatorial scattering is literally the boundary of the torus, the place where the ionized region dominated by electrons gradually becomes colder and dust begins to sublimate. Determining the position of this region is also important to model temperatures and characteristics of dust in AGN. And since the radiation of the central regions of AGNs becomes polarized during the equatorial scattering, more than 10 years ago, Martin Goskill and his co-authors proposed to measure the delay of the polarized radiation. And calculations showed that we should observe the response in the delay of the polarized radiation, but in practice, this delay was too small, less than broadline region size in case of popular Soviet galaxy NGC 5151. There were observations taken in two broad filters where the polarization has the multiple nature and all the polarization mechanisms are mixed up. So in 2020, we proposed a modification of this map, highlighting an exceptionally broad polarized lines, which requires unambiguous polarization characteristics. And the first object that we got the result for was Mercury N6, again, very popular soft galaxy in our team. So from 2010 to 2013, its spectropolarimetric monitoring was carried out on BTA telescope, a very expensive entertainment that required a very large amount of telescope time. And the analyzers of the light cut showed that the light curve in polarized line is about 100 days late relative to the integral continuum, which is 5 times the size of the broadband region, which coincides with both the calibration ratios and the theoretical predictions of the position of the sublimation radius. And at the same time, this estimate is 2 times less than obtained from the infrared interferometry data. Thus, we have manifested a new method, which thanks to observation and of polarized emission lines, where there is no influence of other polarization mechanisms, is quite universal for determining the size of the intermediate region in the AGN. So, except the advantages, there are also some disadvantages of the method. And first of all, like any reverberation mapping campaign, this method requires a very large amount of telescope time. And if there are no big problems with photometry and spectroscopy to find tools to provide the monitoring, for spectropolarimetry, again, it's not for anywhere. I don't think that VLT or even BTA telescopes will be ready to allocate several years to collect statistics within this method. And because of this, we modified the method and, by analogy with the photometric reverberation, began to observe a sample of bright surface galaxies and medium band photos. This allows us to use small telescopes, although everything is not so simple with the instruments, and Jenny in next talk will talk a little about it. Since 2019, we have been observing with small telescopes, struggling first of all with the weather, with which we were terribly unlucky this year. And however, we have some first very preliminary results. And for the first, we have focused on star-like objects, because in this case, we do not need to subtract the host galaxy. And we focused on 2 galaxies. The first is Macron 509. Here, over the entire monitoring period, we received 11 epochs. And this is one of the most frequently observed objects. I'm really not kidding when I'm telling about our unlucky observations this year. For the analysis, we used the Javelin package, which demonstrated itself well earlier in our work in photometric reverberation campaigns. And surprisingly, we found a very narrow peak showing the delay about 114 days. This is approximately 2 times the size of the broadline region, and it's 2 times less than they obtained from the infrared data. And with another galaxy, Macron 335, everything is not so good, despite almost twice number of epochs. Here I express my great gratitude to Stefano Chuvoy, who conducts observations according to our program at Asiago on a 1.8 meter telescope. And about half of the light curves, these red circles, are obtained by him. And cross-correlation still gives a very bad result. There is some peak about 120 days, but with a very great inaccuracy, about 40%. So this result cannot be called reliable. Actually, the previous one as well. So we are in the progress of obtaining more data on this object, but generally speaking, there's some preliminary results that we need to clarify, but it still motivates us to go on with this type of the project. And like a very brief summary in the very end of my contribution, I do need to express again that in SAO, there are several types of polarimetric approaches that we are providing to the investigations of the active galactic nucleus. And we are mostly focused on the spectropolarimetry with the 6 meter BTA telescope and the polarimetric reverberation mapping on the 1 meter telescope. And in case of spectropolarimetry, right now we have a great amount of obtained observational data on approximately 80 surfaces, and all this data is not reduced, and it should be done. The faster the better. But actually, that's a great problem for us, because this big amount of obtained observations should be reduced by somebody. And all the packages that we used are pretty old. They are not user-friendly, and they couldn't be shared with everybody who need it. And in case of the polarized polarimetric reverberation mapping campaign, there are some preliminary results as I show, but we do need some additional steps to reduction process. This includes the new cross-cut correlation methods, the features of the host galaxy subtraction from the images, and again, more observations, more lucky observations that we have before. So that's the end of my talk, and I'm ready to answer your questions, if any.
Thank you very much for this talk. So please, in audience, are there any questions?
There's online question.
Yes, online. Who is asking? Okay, please hear me now. Ask the question.
Yeah, hi, Elena. Very, very interesting talk. Amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
A comment first. I can completely concur with you that polarimetry measurements are very difficult. We have started a program on Subaru to do infrared polarimetry because we were interested to continue the work of Kishiboto and observe the accretion disk spectrum, the extension of it, and basically compare with the RMS spectrum that I showed earlier. And it would be a strong proof if we can show that the two are one and the same picture. We've tried our luck and were clouded out on Macarian 509, but now we think we've got very good data on NGC 4151. So we're working on that, and I think I would like to keep you updated on that. So that's a comment. The question I have you looked at the helium 24686 line? Because you cover that, as I see, with your, if I'm not mistaken, with your polarimetry spectrum. And that would be interesting because the helium 2 line is meant to be produced further in than the hydrogen lines due to its ionization. So you would see basically ionization stratification. Do you see that also with the polarimetry somehow?
Thank you for the question. The short answer on the helium line, no, we hadn't, because in polarimetry, I guess we wouldn't have enough signal in this line.
But so, if you scroll back in your slides,
brilliant.
Do you see the 4686 line? You can see it at the blue end of the spectrum.
And yeah, mm-hmm.
I believe mm-hmm. I see something mm-hmm. there by eye.
There is a helium line here, but actually in polarization we still do not have enough signal to noise ratio. We have no signal to noise, not enough signal to noise ratio, even in the Balmer gamma line. And helium is weaker, and that's the question. Probably it would be good to check for different lines, even weak lines, some polarimetric characteristics. But you know, even for this spectra, we took about 2 hours of observations. And for weak lines, I guess we do not, just in practice, need much more. I don't know, 6 hours, 8 hours. Mm-hmm. Probably it would be good to check. But again, if we are using this method, this spectral polarimetry, it's likely not about the reverberation mapping. So we do not see this stratification. We will see some equatorial scattering, but this do not depend on the emission line. In both emission lines, the estimations of the mass are nearly the same. So I don't know if it has some meaning to do it in polarization, probably.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And okay, last question. Can you remind me the Macarian 509 observations that you have? Which year are they from? Are they actually from 2019? It says the JD there, but I can't do it so quickly in my head. The JD, it says there, the JD. I can maybe plug it in.
That's, I guess that's mostly 2020.
But it's very close to our reverberation mapping, which was made to November 2019. So I'll be very interested to talk to you and see how we can fold in your results into our paper.
Yeah.
I'm writing.
So. Yeah. And actually all these infrared campaigns that about the size of the Delta Taurus are very close to all we are trying to do in polarized light here.
Yeah, so this is not published yet, am I right?
Mm-hmm. No, it's not published. It's very preliminary results that I just calculated half a year ago.
So it's the right time to talk.
Yeah.
Because ours is not published yet either. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Some more questions?
I would like to ask a question. Can you hear me well?
Not so well, but I'll try my best.
Okay, I will try to speak louder. Can you go back to the slide which you discussed with Femina about just one before with this helium line? No, another one. I don't remember.
This?
Yes, that one. The B244. I wonder, can you comment, because you see that the shape, how the angle is changing in H alpha and H beta is a bit different. It's like there is some sort of asymmetry in the H alpha line. See that the region basically it's additional component in H alpha line?
Thank you. That's actually the question, because we do really see that if in H beta line there is such an S-shaped profile that is predicted by the models, here in H alpha line in the blue part of the profile in the blue wing, there is some kind of depolarization probably. We do not actually understand why it's so. But as far as we decompose the broad lines in the paper by Zhenya Malygin in 2020, as if I'm right, then we decompose the broad H beta line, and we see there that there is a broad component and some blue shifted component, which is much weaker, but still. And we do not provide the analyzers of H alpha line, but we could estimate that probably in H alpha line there is also such kind of the additional broad component which could depolarize the emission in H alpha line. That's true.
Thank you very much. And just an answer to Kimine, that's not the helium 2 line, this is not corrected for redshift. So I don't think you can measure here the helium too, because the signal to noise is not so strong, and there is some iron addition here. And so I don't think you can resolve the helium 2 line there. Yes.
Some more questions? If there are no more questions, then thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So now we will start with the other talk. It is Eugen Malygin, Magic 4 1-meter telescope of SAURAS. So you may start.
Hello, good day. Меня слышно? Окей. Good day, dear colleagues. My name is Eugen Malygin, and today I want to tell you a little about magic, or about whether it is possible to make a 1 meter telescope more efficient in observation using magic. Why do we need magic? Well, our team loves AGN research because it's so interesting, useful, and important. We conduct long-term AGN monitorings in our observatory in medium band filters. It's reverberation mapping for measuring black hole masses in AGN. We are carrying out polarimetric reverberation monitoring to refine the spectropolarimetric method for determining the masses of supermassive black holes and other physical parameters in the Aegean Central Pasek proposed by Viktor Afanasyev and Luka Popovich. It is also interesting to study the polarization of objects of the Bayer-Lacerta type, and we get spectroscopic data series to study the change in the shape of spectral lines in Aegean. And generally speaking, all these epithets can be satisfied with a 1 meter class telescope. But for this, we need the appropriate devices. Here are the main characteristics of the optical system of the size 1000 telescope. The size telescope forms a rich Euclidean aplanade with two hyperbolic mirrors. Unfortunately, Cassegrain telescopes have problems with light scattering within the system simply because of their design. This is a problem for precision polarimetry, and I will talk about this problem in more detail. The main characteristic of the telescope is aperture ratio f by 13 at the Cassegrain focus, where all devices are installed except the last one. All instruments have different observation modes, and this is a problem because different observation methods require different weather conditions. For example, if there are no opportunities to carry out polarimetric and even photometric observations, we could obtain the spectra of objects, but a polarimeter can't, and this makes the telescope very inefficient. So let's go back a little to the past. 2018, our team satisfied our interests and carried out observations with the help of nice device called Mangal. Mangal means mapper of narrow galaxy lines. First of all, it is the focal reducer, and this is a very important circumstance, which I will talk about in more detail later. With this reducer, we began our many years of reverberation monitoring of Aegeans in interference filters, but our interests also concerned polarimetry, and there was no such mode in the device. 2019, the MMPP device appeared on the 1 meter telescope, which stands for multi-mode photometer polarimeter. With the help of this device, we continued our photometric monitoring and try to adapt the technique of polarimetric observations, but the accuracy of polarimetry was insufficient to measure the polarization effects in Aegean. Then in 2020, Viktor Afanasyev constructed a Stokes polarimeter where a double Wollaston prism was used as a polarization analyzer, which allows us to simultaneously obtain three parameters of the Stokes vector, and this significantly increases the accuracy of polarimetry. A STOP device made it possible to carry out observations in two modes, photometry and image polarimetry. In the image polarimetry mode, the double Wollaston prism produces four images of the entrance pupil bounded by a rectangular mask, so each image has a field of view of 6 by 1 minus in each direction of polarization. The working field of view is small, and we have limitations on observing extended objects, for example. It is a small problem, but it's still a problem. Finally, the main problem is the oversampling of the image. Here, I'm quoting the great astronomer Georges Cortes, the author of the idea of creating focal reducers. He predicted an oversampling problem for large telescopes. However, this also applies to our 1 meter telescope. Indeed, if we calculate for pixel size of 13.5 microns at f by 13 aperture ratio, the image scale will be equal to 0.2 arcseconds per pixel. But the average sync in the SAO is 1.5 arcseconds. Therefore, such discretization is redundant and limits the observation of fine objects. And we want more light in a single CCD pixel. A few pixels are enough to completely restore information about the line profile. It is more profitable, more useful to accumulate more light inside one pixel. Thus, If we construct the popular reducer, we will reduce the relative focus of the system. This will increase the aperture ratio of the system and the field of view, making observations more efficient. And Viktor Afanasyev made the magic. This is a photometer, polarimeter of the 1 meter telescope for observing galaxies under the MAGIC project. MAGIC stands for Monitoring of Active Galaxies by Investigation Their Course. This is a focal reducer. It reduces the equivalent focal length, turning the aperture ratio of the optical system of the size telescope f by 13 into the resulting f by 6, which in turn increases the field of view. Since the focal reduction is provided by a collimator and a camera, the optical shell has a collimated parallel beam into which it is possible to introduce a dispersive element, which makes this reducer multimode, making it possible to obtain a low resolution spectrum, R equal 1000 from 4000 to 7000 angstroms with dispersion 0.2 nanometers per pixel, with a slit 12 arc minutes long. The quadruple Wollaston prism allows the use of the entire useful field of view, 6 arc minutes for each of the 4 polarization directions, and the photometric mode implies field of view about 12 arc minutes with a scale of 0.45 arc seconds per pixel, and the possibility of using various filters. Here we have 2 turrets with 9 positions each. Thus, this device solves our voiced problem at the same time. On the one hand, we solve the problem of image oversampling by making the system more aperture efficient. We minimize the dependence of observations on weather conditions due to the possibility of switching possible modes from photometric to spectral. Moreover, we increase the field of view for the study of extended objects. We remove limitations on the field of view in the polarimetry mode, and long slit of 12 arc minutes allows low resolution spectroscopy of extended objects. The device is installed in the Cassegrain focus by means of a platform consisting of a rotator and a guiding system. The platform is currently under development. Our engineers are currently working on the guiding system, as well as on the introduction of a calibration reference lamp for spectral observations into the system. The rotator has already been created and is working. Now tests are being carried out with a guiding system. It is necessary for observing faint objects when for a long time inaccuracies in tracking the telescope tube leave the object under study out of the slit. Therefore, the spectral mode is not yet in a completely ready state, but it is suitable for bright objects that do not require long exposures. The guiding system is mechanically mounted on this tube, which leads to the main mirror of the telescope. We calculated and manufactured this detail for shielding scattered light in the Cassegrain system. Unfortunately, Cassegrain telescopes have problems with light scattering within the system simply because of their design. To protect against direct unwanted light, light bubbles were installed in the telescope. These are the cylinders that are placed near the secondary and primary mirrors. But the next problem is the reflection of light on the inner surface of these bubbles. The most dangerous rays of oblique incidence, which are reflected from the inner surface of the bubbles and receive the detector. It is difficult to defend against them, even if the details are painted black very well. And this leads to the additional noise in photometric observations. This is a problem for observing faint objects. Also, scattered light is very dangerous for polarimetric observations. Thus, we measured the configuration of the telescope, carried out calculations, and together with Viktor Afanasyev installed annular diaphragms inside bubbles and an additional tube with diaphragm just in front of the focal plane. Of course, we painted the rings and all the details black. This is a picture inside our 1 meter telescope tube, and it shows how bubbles look like with diaphragms placed inside, which surround the useful light beam and block parasitic rays. Why did we do it? The slide shows two frames of photometric fluid field before and after installation the apertures. Finally, we now have a really flat field. Previously, the additional light caused a drop of intensity at the edges of the frame of the order of 10%. It is clear that the scattered light is additive noise and cannot be taken into account in the frames of the flat field. And we cannot divide by such frames because this is not a multiplicative error. Obviously, reducing the scattered light problem improves the accuracy of photometric observations, and of course, it allows for polarimetric observations because scattered light has an extremely negative effect on polarimetry, making the instrumental polarization inhomogeneous all over the field of view. Well, the next important step in methodical measurements of instrument is to measure the characteristics of the CCD. Andor Icon L 936 CCD system with E2V CCD 4240 of the DD type. DD stands for deep depletion, that is thick crystal, format 2 by 2,000 pixels with a pixel size of 13.5 microns, is used as a detector. The quantum efficiency of this CCD is more than 90% in the range of 400 to 850 nanometers, and at least 40% in the range from the 340 nanometers to almost 1 micron. We use air cooling with the pen and in cooler, which make it possible to carry out observations with a temperature of CCD about minus 80 degrees. First of all, of course, we measured the gain. This is a standard procedure where the gain is measured from the slope of the dispersion versus mean flux at various exposure in the laboratory. In observations, we use two gain modes, high and low, and pre-readout frame rates. In the high mode, we have the ability to accumulate a signal up to about 60,000 counts. And in the low mode, a little more than 20,000. The graph shows that after 20,000, the dispersion behaves non-linearly, and such data is no longer reliable for scientific measurements. It is interesting to note, and this can be seen in zoomed part of feature, that the variance does not behave strictly linearly, but there are some variations around the linear dependence. This is probably due to the fact that the CCD has a thick crystal, and this is a manifestation of the features of such a CCD. Having measured the gain, we can measure all other characteristics in the future, including the amount of readout noise. At the normal readout rate, the noise is 5 to 6 electrons. At the readout rate slow, is only 2 or 3 electrons. Here, the lower figures show the linearity measurements of the CCD signal, namely the deviation from linearity in percent. In all modes of the CCD, linearity is well performed and does not exceed 0.5%. A more important characteristic is measured in the upper figures. This is the so-called dispersion index or Fano factor. More details about this type of measurement can be found in the article by Irina Afanasyeva in the Astrophysical Bulletin for 2016. In short, the idea is that the recorded signal with the CCD does not always follow Poisson statistics, and each CCD detector needs to be measured for deviations from the statistics. If the index is equal to 1 for the given range of values, the statistics is Poisson. For example, the figures show that for small signal accumulations of the order of 100 of counts, the statistics is not Poisson. It is clear that these deviations are caused by readout noise. also for this CCD, there are problems for a readout rate norm. The signal dispersion behaves in a strange way, and we have no explanation why. Fortunately, in the slow readout rate, there are no such problems, and the Poisson statistics is performed over a wide range of exposures. Another interesting feature of the detector, thick chips, so-called deep depletion, lack the interference pattern that occurs at red wavelengths. These are the so-called fringes. There are no fringes on such chips. We illuminated the detector with various wavelengths, and at wavelength of about 1 micron, we noticed strange inhomogeneities. The reason is unknown to us. It can be the feature of a protective glass near the chip, or the effects of optics in the device at 1 micron, or something else. These irregularities are round, so they are not fringes. Their value does not exceed 2%. Moreover, we don't observe at 1 micron. Just interesting picture, additional information about the detector. Finally, after CCD studies, we can measure the quantum efficiency of the device. We made observations of non-standard stars using medium band filters and calculated the quantum efficiency of the magic, which includes the total efficiency of the telescope, the optics in the device, and CCD detector. It is about 45% in this wavelength range. Photometric mode. We get frames of 2000 by 2000 pixels with a frame scale of 0.45 parsecs per pixel. That is, the field of view is equal to 12 by 12 arc minutes. This scale provides bioreducer, and this is useful. A large aperture ratio allows to accumulate more light from weak diffuse details, for example. With our device, we usually work with objects of the 16 magnitude. With sync of 2, we have an accuracy of about 5 thousandths of a magnitude. The limiting magnitude is reached in 20 minutes of exposure and is equal to 22.5 with a signal-to-noise ratio of 4 with sync of about 1. And of course, we have built a color equation to relate our instrumental values to the standard ones. In photometric mode, we can enter 16 positions in turrets with different filters into the beam. This can be medium band filters, narrow band BVR filters, as well as various calibration masks and the slit for spectral observation. In the MAGIC, the polarization analyzer is installed in a parallel beam. We use a Wollaston double prism of the original quadrupole design, detailed in Gehr's article. The advantage of using a double Wollaston prism is the simultaneous measurement of the three Stokes parameters, that is, obtaining 4 images in different directions of polarization, and a large field of view of 6 by 6 arc minutes. With the help of observations of unpolarized standard stars, we measured the instrumental polarization. It turned out that the value of polarization depends on the position of the object in the mask. Multiple observations of unpolarized standards in different positions in the field have shown that the polarization change in the field is stable and has a smooth dependence in the field. The average value of the degree of instrumental polarization is 3.5%. In this case, in the wavelength range from 6 to 7 thousand angstroms, the instrumental polarization is the same. Our laboratory tests of the optics and detector with other polarization analyzers introduced into the beam show that the source of instrumental polarization is a quadrupole Wollaston prism. However, we have not found a specific reason yet. Anyway, we described the changes in Q and U parameters with a first-order surface after collecting observations of unpolarized stars for instrumental polarization using this model. The deviations of the Q and U parameters from zero were less than 0.05%. The figure below shows the correspondence between the degree of polarization and the angle of a plane of polarization phi for a set of high polarization standard stars. Thus, despite the presence of instrumental polarization of unknown nature in the device, at the moment we are able to carry out high precision polarimetric observations, including extended objects in the field of view 6x6 arc minutes. The spectral model provides a resolution in terms of R equal to 1000. That is the FWHM is about 10 angstroms. For a 2 arc second slit, we obtain spectra with a dispersion of 0.2 nanometers per pixel. On the slide, they obtained spectrum of object EH21+643. In the blue part, the spectrum is limited to a wavelength of 4000 angstroms, where the grating sensitivity is less than 1%. It is interesting to note that the slit width in angular measure should be projected onto three detector pixels. With this will be the optimal discretization. If we calculate the required size of the slit, we get a value of 1.4 arc seconds. It is great if the required slit size matches the special resolution of the telescope or average sync. So we use a 2 second slit. That is, with average sync in the SAO of the order of 1.5 arc seconds, we don't lose light on the slit, and we get the optimal discretization of the detector. Monochromatic image of the 2 second slit on the detector occupies 3.5 pixels. And an important advantage is the slit height equal to 12 arc minutes. This allows spectroscopy of extended objects without problems with sky subtraction. This is the magic control shell implemented in the IDL programming language. Here we can monitor the state of telescope, the weather, manage different observation modes, change filters in turrets, control CCD modes. It allows us to remotely control the device. Thus, we talked about the magic multimode photometer polarimeter, which is a focal reducer. It's a device that can solve many problems at the same time, from oversampling long focus telescope images to weather dependency, and make a 1 meter telescope much more efficient. We methodically investigated all the modes of observations of on the device and get the corresponding accuracies. A small article can be found in the archive, and now we will prepare a very detailed paper on all methodological measurements very soon. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the talk. So please, are there any questions? Somebody in the audience, online? Well, if there are no any questions, let me thank again the speaker.
Thank you.
So now is the coffee break with a discussion. So enjoy the coffee break.
I have just to organize the acoustic here.
I don't know what's all this.
Okay. Can you hear me well?
Recording in progress.